Now, one of the most important issues facing the country at present is how to keep healthcare workers safe and healthy, because without those frontline staff, the expected surge in COVID-19 cases could overwhelm the health service. One issue, of course, is the supply of personal protective equipment to prevent doctors and nurses from becoming infected themselves, and we'll be discussing that later in the programme. But first, what about the psychological toll of dealing with the pandemic? How do we minimise the stress faced by those at the sharp end of the crisis? Carol Coleman has been finding out.
My name is Emma and I work in the high dependency unit in an acute hospital in the Midwest. Right now, my unit has been currently adapted to allow for intensive care patients if our designated ICU becomes under pressure in terms of capacity. Day in, day out, there is a lot of stress and there's a lot of anticipation. You're waiting, you're wondering, when is the surge going to happen? How is it going to be? How are we going to manage these patients? But in fairness, I will say where I work, I've been highly impressed with, you know, management and I suppose my colleagues. Like, we've all kind of pulled together and supported each other through all the hard times. And like, there obviously is times when you just feel like this is so overwhelming.
I'm Margaret Frahill. I'm on the National Executive of the Irish Nurse and Midwives Organisation. And I'm also a nurse manager who works full time here in Cork. Senior nurses like me, we've all been retrained again, upskilled on ventilation, non-invasive ventilation, aerosol generated procedures, the wearing of PPE. You know, everyone's out of their comfort zone and we're trying to relay, you know, trying to relay people's anxieties. We're also trying to ensure that we're all trained for nursing the COVID positive patients, which we have done. This is very stressful in itself because, as you know, the patients are nursed in isolation. They cannot see us because we've goggles, masks, full PPE on. They have no visitors. So we're trying to keep them at ease as well. So nursing a non-COVID positive patient is very, very hard, both for the patient and ourselves, because we all go home every day to families and children. So we have to ensure that the minute we come out of that room, we have to go through a full process, not touching, showering before we go home. The other thing that's totally changed, the hospital is eerily quiet because of no visitors. Nobody's allowed beyond the front door, only hospital personnel.
Emma in Limerick and Margaret in Cork are telling a story familiar to anyone working in an intensive care unit in Ireland right now. Stress and worry about what's to come are common. And not just in Ireland, but everywhere this virus goes. Joanne Morell is an ICU nurse in Huddersfield in Britain and has the same anxiety.
And it's just that anticipation and that feeling of overwhelming dread of what you're going to face and what you're going to see when you go into work. And at the moment, it's unprecedented. We've never had to deal with anything quite like this. So we're all just feeling a little bit overwhelmed, anxious, and a bit helpless, to be fair. On top of that, we feel immensely proud and a sense of teamwork, that we're all really coming together to do something quite amazing.
Each of the nurses told me how important the support of colleagues and employers are to them now. Martin Rogan, CEO of Mental Health Ireland, says while counselling is vital, staff should look out for each other.
I think one of the beauties of working in a multidisciplinary team is that different skill sets come together. And oftentimes it might be the person who's perhaps not the most qualified, who is always on the lookout. Certainly we've heard of experience in busy A&E departments in the UK, for example, where the tea lady was the person who checked in with staff members and just quietly came up with a cup of tea saying, I think you need a little break. And she was a really good indicator, a kind of a seismic sensor within the team, that the level of mental health demand and need was overwhelming. And if we don't care for our staff members, they develop what's called compassion fatigue, and they simply won't be in a position to care for people into the future.
Advice from the Irish Association for Counselling and Psychotherapy is that medical staff should never ignore their feelings of stress.
So I think the most important thing is, if you're feeling the anxiety, if you're feeling the pain, if you're feeling anger, whatever that is, acknowledge it. Share that with your colleagues. I'm feeling frightened. I'm feeling scared. Acknowledge your feeling. Do not push it away.
IACP Councillor Gráinne Clancy says staff working long hours on busy shifts should use every opportunity to decompress.
Hugs. Normally we would have been able to give each other a hug. Can't do that, but you can hug yourself. You know, you can give yourself a rub, and that helps release the oxytocin, which goes again, you know, will help bring your body back down into a state of relaxation.
My name is Magella Kennedy. I am an accredited counsellor with IACP. I am based in North Tipperary. Post-traumatic stress disorder, it's a condition that some people will develop after having experienced a distressing or a shocking or a terrifying event. And it's inevitable that there are going to be some people who will experience post-traumatic stress after this whole event. And I think, again, I think the frontline workers, the healthcare workers, are probably going to feel more affected because, again, they're there at the coalface on the day-to-day.
Back on the wards, the biggest worry for nurses like Emma in Limerick and Margaret in Cork is getting COVID-19 themselves.
You do worry about every time you go into a patient's room and that might have COVID. You do worry, you know, could I be the one to get it? And then, especially if you have a vulnerable relative at home, you're definitely worried, could I be bringing that home to them? I've had to stay away from my family home, so I'm not seeing my parents at the moment. And my parents wouldn't be in very good health. So I've had to make that decision that I can't see them, and it's tough.
That's the biggest thing for everybody, you know, that they'll get sick themselves. And, you know, long term, you know, I work with a lot, you know, like everybody has a lot of nurses, you know, have underlying issues as well. Not just nursing, every employee, everybody nationally is worried for their families and siblings, you know. Do you know, we've nurses that are pregnant, we've healthcare since they're pregnant. You know, you do worry for all your staff as well. You do worry both for yourself and for everybody, you know. Reading from other countries, looking at Italy, Spain, China, that's to come. I mean, they're saying that's to come, and listening to, you know, we're doing our best to be ready, but we know how ready we are, you know.
Every night I've come home from work, I come through the door, like I said, and go upstairs, and I do have a cry, either in the car on the way home or in the shower, because of the enormity of it all and the things that we are seeing is just truly heartbreaking.
Nurse Joanne Morell, end of that report by Carol Coleman. I'm joined now by Serena O'Brien, who's the chairperson of the Irish Association of Critical Care Nurses and is herself a clinical nurse manager in ICU at the Mater Hospital in Dublin. Serena, thanks for joining us. Those stories we heard in Carol's report, anxiety and stress are a part of life in the ICU at the best of times. What's it like now in your own hospital and around the country?
So thank you, David, for having me on your programme. So as you said yourself, critical care is a stressful environment, even on a good day. But I suppose we're used to working at this level and often we perform better under a certain amount of pressure. But I think what we are faced with now is that we're working in a situation where we're concerned for our own health and that of our families. This is a whole new dimension that we've never, ever experienced before. So there's definitely tension there. It's palpable, but it tends to come in ebbs and flows. So where I'm working at the moment in the Mater ICU, the staff morale is actually quite good, but that's subject to change. We do have a strong resolve to galvanise together. We actually want to come to work because we know that we have the skills that are necessary to care for these critically ill patients, but we also want to be there for each other. We want to support each other because we know we've got very busy times ahead. But critical care nurses are going to have to work somewhat differently now as we go into a pandemic, and there'll be added stressors for us on a day-to-day basis. But what's really been helpful is the wonderful support from the public and the generosity that we've received from companies and charities such as Feed the Heroes. It's certainly lifted our spirits on a day-to-day basis, and we're very, very grateful for that.
And what about the issue of personal protective equipment? Obviously, that is key to keeping you safe, and obviously that's important in itself, but it also means that you can continue working. I mean, I presume people, it hasn't been helpful to see reports about maybe deficiencies in PPE around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. When I put PPE on myself, I actually feel safe and I feel well protected. But I have to have PPE that's of high quality to ensure that I am safe, and that we have to make sure that the PPE is going to be of adequate supply. It's going to keep coming so that we don't run out as the weeks move on. PPE is our best defence. I know people have been saying all heroes don't wear capes, but we do. We wear PPE. But we know, look, the PPE, it's a very precious commodity right now. There's a shortage globally due to demand. And nurses are actually paying their part. We're trying to use the PPE very efficiently, and we're trying to reduce wastage. But recently, there's been concerns about the quality of the PPE that's been acquired, and it's not of good standard. And I think this needs to be addressed as a matter of priority. If we don't have good quality PPE, well, then we are going to become ill. And that's just the bottom line. And we've seen this happen in other countries.
Sure. And obviously, it's going to be very difficult to carry on in a situation where there aren't adequate supplies coming down
the tracks.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What about staffing levels and capacity at the moment, Serena? Because I know we still haven't seen the surge or the peak that we're expecting. We heard there from that nurse in England, Joanne Morell, mm-hmm. about the pressure that they're facing now. And obviously, as you say, we've seen Italy, we've seen Spain. How mm-hmm. are staffing levels? How is capacity at the moment?
So I suppose if you're caring for a critically ill patient, it's very much a multidisciplinary approach. You've got doctors, nurses, allied health professionals, pharmacy, laboratory. Of course, we've got our household staff who are very important to us. And that's just to name a few. But in terms of critical care nursing, there is actually a shortage of critical care nurses worldwide. Ireland is no different. A critical care nurse is a very highly educated and skilled professional. They've completed a postgraduate and even some nurses' master's degree. At the moment, there's about 250 critical care beds nationally, but we've always been striving to increase this capacity. But it's very much dependent on our nursing workforce. If we want to increase capacity, we need the financial resources, we need the space, we need equipment, and we need the staff. And the staff is probably the most challenging part. So in terms of nursing staff, you actually need 6 critical care nurses just to open 1 ICU bed and keep that bed open 24/7. So for us, the challenge as we prepare for a surge in demand is how we're actually going to increase capacity quite quickly with a finite number of critical care nurses. So I suppose what hospitals have been doing over the last number of weeks has been redeploying nursing staff into the critical care area. These nurses may have worked in ICU previously, or perhaps they may not, but we are certainly really, really happy to have these nurses join our team. But at the same time, we're mindful that they, although they're experts in their own field, the critical care area may be a very different and unfamiliar environment for them. And this is a very daunting experience. So we have to provide concentrated education sessions for these nurses around the fundamentals of critical care nursing. And we have to support and guide these nurses to assist them in the quite advanced clinical decision making that happens at the bedside every day. So to ensure that we get safe patient care, we need to dilute our critical care nurses across the ICU complex and beyond as we surge. So what we find now is that we'll have critical care nurses who are not only responsible for their own patient, but they're going to have to oversee the care delivery of these redeployed nurses and support them as well. So you can imagine they're working very differently. They've got added responsibility, and that's an increased anxiety and stress for the critical care nurse on a day-to-day basis.
And you mentioned wearing PPE, which is obviously so important. How does that affect how you actually carry out your job?
Yeah, I mean, it makes everything difficult. PPE, there's a lot of PPE that we're wearing. It's very, very warm in it and very, very hot. You're actually not as quick as you might be. Everything's done a little bit more slowly. Communication is very difficult. In fact, we can't even drink when we're in there. So before we go into the room, we have to hydrate because we won't be coming out of that isolation room for probably at least 3 hours to get a break. And, you know, our nurses are working in this PPE for 12-hour shifts. So it's very difficult. It's very warm. It can often be difficult to see if a nurse is struggling because all we can actually see is their eyes. So we can't, often you communicate through body language, and that can be very, very difficult. So we have to ask our nurses that if they're struggling, that they come and they ask for help.
And what about the issue of, we talked about trauma, we talked about stress in Carol's report there and the long-term effects. I mean, everybody's talking about looking after your mental health during the lockdown and all the rest of it, but it's so important for people on the front line, isn't it?
Absolutely. Nurses are actually very good in supporting each other. Often when we go to tea break, we'll debrief. But this is actually a lot more challenging now because we're actually trying to maintain social distancing within the workplace. So What we're having to do is encourage people to contact their line managers for support, which they would have always done. Locally in my hospital, a helpline has been set up by our psychology department for staff to reach out to, and they have done so already. And also, staff are encouraged to call ABATE, which is a workplace counselling service, which is provided free of charge. And all of this is, of course, kept strictly confidential, which is important. But that's not to say you can't do very simple and effective measures for our ourselves, and such things as limiting the amount of social media that we expose ourselves to, because when we look at what's happening in Italy and Spain, it's quite overwhelming, and we know that we're heading in that direction. But what's really, really important, though, is that healthcare workers need to get downtime. They have to have their days off, and that's really important. They need to rest and recuperate, both physically and mentally, because we know that we're in this for the long haul. When society opens up again, hospitals are still going to be very, very busy for many weeks and months beyond that time. So we need to be in our best health so that we can care for our patients.
Serena O'Brien, Chairperson of the Irish Association of Critical Care Nurses, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David.
We can talk now to the Chief Executive of the HSE, Paul Reid. Good afternoon and thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Justin.
When we spoke last week, you were awaiting the arrival of personal protective equipment from China. We now know that some of that is not suitable for our medical staff. We read today in the Business Post that 4 in 10 items were assessed in an internal HSE audit, including goggles, visors, masks, were unsuitable. Can you confirm that that is the case, that the numbers are that high?
Well, I'll go through each element of the numbers, which is just, and as I do, can firstly just really say from Emma's and Margaret and Serena's perspectives there, I think it was just excellent contributions in terms of the anxiety that they're experience, the concerns that they have, the sacrifices they're making for their families. And I just want to say I'm extremely proud as CEO at HSE, just listening to their contributions. And I know the public are extremely proud, specifically in relation to the concerns that they've all expressed in terms of PPE and wanting to feel safe and ensuring we have an adequate supply. And that's my primary concern as CEO at HSE. Today, I'm speaking to you now from the distribution centre here in Clondalkin, where we've had the first batch delivered and being dispatched across the country, and we brought everybody through the categories that you just listed. So we've broken delivery into what we've received so far to date in three categories. The first category, which is 65% of delivery, is suitable, meets all the specifications, and it exceeds in some cases. That seems like quite overalls, gowns, gloves, goggles, face shields, etc. The second category, which we demonstrated, was primarily a white overall gown, which we would classify, it's about 15% of the order, and we would classify that as can be used if the preferred first line of supply isn't available. So it will meet a standard, but we prefer a first line. And then the 20% of the order that we received from China, it doesn't meet the specification that we had set out that we want. We will use it and we can use it in the healthcare settings, but not in healthcare staff settings.
Okay, and what kind of equipment is that?
That's primarily the 20% factor, is primarily masks that are not respiratory masks that we need.
Okay, and does that mean then that there, because 20% of the equipment, and those are primarily masks, are not suitable for healthcare workers, is there now a shortage of masks?
No, just to say, so you are correct, they won't be suitable for use for that purpose, for our healthcare workers, and we won't be using it for that use. What we have done specifically in relation to those, two things. We've gone back to our provider in China, and we have said to them that we don't want any more of those in the next order. That's not what we require. We've also, with an existing supplier here in Ireland, they have scaled up, doubled their capacity based in Limerick, and they will triple their capacity in the coming weeks, and they will provide respiratory masks for us. But just to say specifically on it, there were other donations that we have received in the last while, and people with best intentions from various sources have brought in. And some of the pictures you will have seen during the week were actually from some of those donated sources, not from the order that we have secured from China. So specifically from the order from China, and just to say this, and I know, I think Serena said her contribution, this is a worldwide battle across the world, and we have seen many international big countries trying to outbid for the order that we have secured. We want to maintain the supply. Our supplier has worked with us the last few days in terms of some of those elements that aren't up to the standard we want. Oh. They will send us revised specs next week and we will be looking at them. But our ultimate priority is exactly what Emma, Margaret and Serena have said. It's the protection of our staff and maintaining an adequate supply for all our healthcare workers.
Okay. Can you be confident, or how can you be confident, if you are going to use that same supplier again, that supplier who supplied equipment, 20% of which was not suitable for healthcare workers, how can you be confident that you're going to get equipment that's up to standard the next time? I mean, are there people, for example, are there people on the ground checking this stuff before it's put on flights to Dublin?
Oh, what we do is, again, and based on this being a very challenging market overall, one thing I do, just to say to Justin, I worry about every day. Many of us have concerns as we go through the crisis. The one thing I worry about every day and every evening is that we have an adequate supply of PPE for our frontline healthcare workers. That's a major concern of mine. And I've no doubt it will be, continue to be, not just as we deliver each order, but throughout this whole process, because some places are tight in stock and we have to redistribute. In terms of confidence levels with the supplier, again, the majority of the supply that we've got is being distributed literally in the centre that I've been speaking to you from. Those pieces that haven't, we are talking with the supplier and they have been very cooperative with us.
Okay, but I'm talking about the next order and in terms of checking it. I mean, are there people that are checking that before it goes on the flight?
I think the reality of the, you know, the market that we're in, it's impossible to have some people to all of the supplies that we're getting. Our primary, we can only be 100% assured when we receive it. And Professor Martin Cormacan, who is here today with me at the press conference, he said all his team fully examine all of the supplies when they come to our distribution centre here. And that's the best check. And that equally applies, Justin, to all of the suppliers that we're securing across the world at the moment. You can only fully assure them, and this is going for our ventilators as well that arrived this week, assured and assembled in a factory down in Cork. And that's the nature of the market. It's not normal circumstances.
Yes, it is a challenging market. Now, can I ask you about another challenge, and that is in relation to testing? You told us last week that labs here were having a problem getting reagent. That's the chemical needed to finish off the tests in the laboratories. You said earlier at your briefing that testing would be scaled up to about 4,500 tests per day from next week. Is it still the intention then to scale up further to the 15,000 tests per day that were announced by the Minister for Health, Simon Harris?
Yeah, so since I spoke to you last week, we've had, and we still have a continued issue around the supply of reagents. What we have done since last week is we've got a major European supplier, a laboratory tester, to carry out these test runs, and they have the reagents. So we sent a significant, several thousand across to them. The first 2,000 have been received back since Friday, and we expect 2,000 to be returned every day in coming week. That immediately, and also with scaling up at some labs here in Ireland, ENFER and the Department of Agriculture Laboratories, that gives us a capacity next week for 4,500. Now, for next week, like on PPE, this is a daily and a weekly basis in which we manage it. So the reagent that we want to get, we are in discussion across the world on the supply. We do expect to receive a significant supply next week, and they again will be quality assured and tested. And again, that's a risk, that's the environment we're in.
And if you get that supply, Paul Reid, will you be able to ramp up to the 15,000 tests per day that was announced by the Minister last month?
We're very anxious to continue to scale that up, and we expect the capacity, still talking to Irish companies here in terms of reagent supply, making progress with some and not so much with others. We expect to continue to ramp this up in the coming weeks. But Justin, it is a week-on-week basis, and that's the risk environment. That's the worldwide pressure on the supply of these reagents. But we are aiming to scale up. We are aiming to get to that number. But it's going to take us throughout April to continue to scale up. But can I just, Justin, very briefly on our testing, I think this is important for the public. Two things. Firstly, we do still, with 37,000 tests completed, we are in the top tier of countries in the world for tests completed. We want to continue, we want to do more. But we're still in the top tier of tests completed by any comparison with other countries around the world. Okay. And we want to continue and build that.
Okay. Now, people have been in a lockdown situation for over a week in this country now. There is a report in the Mail on Sunday today that consideration is being given to extending that lockdown period for perhaps another 2 weeks beyond Easter, and then maybe lifting it on a phased basis, perhaps on a regional or a county-by-county basis. Can you say anything about that?
Well, just the first thing, if I can't say again, and I know every week I'm saying this with you, Justin, first thing is a real call to the public. I know they've made sacrifices and continue to make sacrifices. Next week is really important for us, and I'm urging everybody. Their actions so far have actually saved lives. Their actions so far have reduced the numbers of people that we are treating in intensive care units at Emmet Barrett, Serena Potomac Village. Their actions are working. Guidance in terms of how long should this be extended, issues around regions, will only emerge from the experts, which are the public health experts, and that those recommendations go to government. You know, so from my perspective, I think the whole public is concentrating on what happens next week, and I'm urging them to continue to do everything they're doing because it's making a huge difference.
Okay, now you mentioned next week being a critical week. You heard Serena there in the interview with David talking about capacity in ICU, in intensive care units, and she was telling us that you need 6 ICU nurses for each critical care bed. Now, I know that you have been speaking about ramping up capacity in terms of beds, but have you been able to ramp up capacity in terms of staff? I mean, how quickly can you get staff trained up to deal with the surge that is coming?
Yeah, and I think both Margaret and Emma equally were talking about this. Firstly, redeploying. So there's a number of aspects about scaling up our ICU capacity. The major element of it is staff. So first of all, we need to scale up the number of ICU beds and capacity that we have. And that has been ongoing. And now, with having secured a heads of terms agreement with the private hospitals, we see between our ICU, our high dependency units, the use of our theatres and our post-operative beds from theatres, our capacity will significantly scale up, probably to over 800. But the major challenge, as Emma and Margaret have both said, and Serena, is redeploying staff in the first instance, training up some further staff with us, it's a highly critical care need for consultants and our nurses and our medics. And that's a process that's ongoing. I'm also happy to say that we are recruiting since we put out the call, Ireland on Call, and over 800 primarily frontline workers have been recruited and signing contracts as we speak. Nurses, doctors, healthcare assistants. So that's part of scaling up the resource, redeploying, and scaling up our ICU capacity, and indeed delivery of our ventilators, which I said in the press conference today, is progressing well.
Okay, Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the Health Service Executive, thank you very much for joining us on this.